Welcome to TBF, a Browns Fans Podcast. Well, that's the way to do it. If you're going to win a game, win a game. My. What was it? 27-0. The only thing that would have made it sweeter is if it had been somebody other than the Cardinals. And to add insult to injury for the Cardinals, not only did they lose 27-0, Josh Dobbs went and with less than a week in Minnesota, wins their game for him in Atlanta. Amazing. Makes you wonder why we gave up Josh Dobbs. I don't know. Would we be better off if we'd had Josh Dobbs at backup? Don't know. It's TBF, a Browns Fans Podcast. Here to talk about the Cleveland Browns and their potential. Going into the second half of the season, 5-3. Is it amazing that they're 5-3 now?
I don't know how to answer that yet. On one hand, I want to say yeah, but for the fact that the past two seasons we expected them to be good, I want to say no, because the personnel is there.
Right.
The defense is... I think the defense is what... let's look at, like, the last 2 years, and we expect what we expected out of the defense. It's almost like it's now actually doing what we expect.
Well, right. Yes, exactly. You know, we've gone into the last couple seasons thinking that, well, the defense on paper is so good that if the offense is just decent, we should be somewhere.
Right.
Okay. But the offense hasn't even been decent. We lead the league in giveaways.
If we had the offense we had last year, we'd be the best team in the league
right now. Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, this game, the game that we pitch a shutout against the Cardinals, this is the first game this year without turnovers. And you can't do that and win, not consistently, right?
Well, here's my proposition on that.
Uh-huh.
I think we're in a position where if we can get Watson to a point, and quite honestly, it looks like he kind of is. Last game was a transition of him returning himself to some health here. Because I think the last game he performed very poorly was a bad example, okay? And the play calling wasn't favorable to the fact that he was injured, okay? This past game, though, we saw a little more comfortability out of him. If Watson can just even get himself to a point to where, hey, he can pull off two or three big plays in a game and then keep the turnovers as low as possible, play safe ball, Trent Dilfer style, I could see us winning that way. They have the defense to do it. I think, on one hand, I think we still have not been big tested, really, against a big offense. Okay? We maybe played a good offense, but I don't think we've played, like, you know, what's going to happen if we encounter the Chiefs? What's going to happen if we counter the Dolphins? You know what I mean?
Well, right. Now, let's say this. The Dolphins were looking like an offensive powerhouse like none had ever seen before. Better than the greatest show on turf. And they've calmed down some. Okay? It's gotten back to reality for them. And Mike McDaniels, you know, imagine the hell this guy's going to catch when they start having bad times. Because he came in the door I mean, and listen, as far as football coaches go, have you ever seen a guy that looks less like a football coach than him?
I mean, that seems to me, Kevin Stefanski looks.
Well, no, but next to Mike McDaniels, he looks like a giant. Okay, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Mike McDaniels looks like a guy. It's like, you're the head football coach? Really? Okay. I thought you were the dude. I thought you were the audiovisual guy. I thought you were the, and hey, he's a football geek in the very biggest sense of the word. Not a bad thing. At least not a bad thing as long as you're winning. I mean, how does that go when it ain't working? That's the thing we'll all see when that happens, not wishing it on them or anything like that. But yeah, I mean.
Now, I will say this. What we saw last game, okay, and opposed to the last time we saw Watson, okay, one of my gripes were Walker just the game before the last that Watson had his bad game, right? We saw a lot of, like, screen passing, short dump passes turning into big games and stuff like that, and plays designed to do so, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of all these plays designed for Watson to thread a needle to somebody, mm-hmm. okay? This past game, you saw that. You saw Njoku getting the ball short and being a ball carrier, all that same stuff they were doing with P.J. Walker. So instead of putting all that pressure on Watson, okay, to be this prolific passer.
Yeah, but let me tell you, that pass in the second half to Cooper, that straight down the field pass, that wasn't a touchdown that ended at the 1 yard line. That's the best pass he's thrown as a Cleveland Brown.
I can agree with that. But Kevin Stefanski last game, he ran the ball. Well, he ran the ball at times you would think you'd run the ball to get that first down.
Okay. Well, I think he had taken enough heat after third and three. Okay, right? I mean, third and three with 2 minutes left on the clock. All they got to do is you know, run the clock out on these guys. And you lost that game because we didn't run the ball on that. I mean, I'm sorry. You can say about the turnovers or anything else, but that game hinged on that play call.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that whether it was publicly being confronted by the press about that call, I don't think that there was not conversations had about that. Okay. Whether it was Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski or whether it was Jimmy Haslam and Kevin Stefanski, it was like, hey, dude, you lost that fucking game. Whether Kevin Stefanski comes out in front of a mic and says, this one's on me. Because I think he's out of the this one's on me era, isn't he? He's got to be. Because when it becomes this one's on me, then it's going to be this one get fired. I mean, here's
go for it.
Here's what I'm worried about with Kevin Stefanski. And don't get me wrong. And I want to have this problem, believe it or not. I let him do so good that nobody's thinking about saying fire Kevin Stefanski again.
Well, we were just having the same thought. I was about to say Kevin Stefanski is about to enter the territory where he's the best, by record-wise, the best coach that's ever been threatened with a hot seat.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But from the standpoint of like a fan or even a front office looking at it, the criticism has not been the record. The criticism has been the consistency of winning to win a championship, okay, through the fact that you're blaming those losses on play call. Okay?
Right. It's going to be very interesting because now, you know, going to Baltimore to take on the Ravens, no easy task, okay? It ain't easy when you host them at home. And quietly, very quietly, the Browns are not the number one defense anymore. You know that, right?
Yes.
But you know that. Who's the number one defense, the right? The Ravens. The Ravens. There you go. So it's not like they're not pitching the same thing we're pitching. And
they're having a similar problem we are. I just think they are sturdier in their quarterback situation.
Well, in the quarterback situation, but that's the thing, and that's going to be the difference. Unfortunately, if you look at the way these teams match up, they're even almost all over the place. And the thing is the quarterback's going to be the difference. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, Lamar Jackson's going to play his game.
Right.
So it's going to be Deshaun Watson's performance is going to be the difference in this game. If we get good Deshaun, we're good.
Right. I agree with that. What's interesting about, I think, that dynamic with it is, I think if Deshaun, I'm trying to find a good way to say it. I think Deshaun can match Lamar in the passing game. I think he's good enough. I already think he's shown he's good enough to do that. The problem the Browns are going to have with the Ravens situation is Lamar always makes it to where they do have a running threat. Both teams are in the situation they don't have their main back. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could argue that the Ravens do, because Lamar is their main back. The guy he hands the ball off to is the number two guy. Lamar's a legitimate threat to take off on a planned run any down.
Yes, I just don't want to shy away from the fact that their actual running back is a very good running back.
Oh, sure. Right?
So we are in a similar situation where they are actually missing something. You know, that's where I was trying to get at. They are not a complete team.
I am of the opinion, or certainly want, Myles Garrett and the defense to go ahead and really make life difficult for Lamar.
Right. So let's look at what happened last week with us, right? So we won. We pitched a shutout. 27-0, right?
Yes, we did.
27 points. We managed to score 27 points. Some would argue we should have scored. We had the opportunity, if we capitalized more, we should have something more around like 40-something points. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the Ravens. The Ravens darn near pitched a shutout.
Mm-hmm. Might as well have been, right? They gave him 3 points.
3 points, and they scored 37 points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's where we are in our comparison of, like, us and the Ravens. Right now, they are still generating more offense than we are. Is their offense 100%? It's not, okay? Is it running? Is it operating better than ours is? It is. Lamar threw 21 for 26 for 187 yards. Was that a blistering performance? No, but 21 for 26 is really good. Will we probably make that a lot harder for him with our passing defense and as good as we've been this year? Yes. The hampering for us with Lamar Jackson is going to be, and this doesn't make it impossible because our defensive line has been awesome, but our defensive line has not been tested with the fact that if we get in the backfield, what happens if he gets by us? Okay? Which is not something we've had to deal with. We haven't had a quarterback our defense has been tested to have to deal with that this year.
Past
the last time they played Lamar Jackson.
And very, very similar, if you will, statistical performances between Watson and Jackson.
Right.
Watson, maybe, here, the difference is this. Watson's performance, 19 of 30 for 219 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, long of 59, rating of 107.5, is his best game as a Brown. Okay? And Jackson had a pedestrian 96.6 rating on no touchdowns, no interceptions, but 21 of 26 for 187 yards. Very pedestrian for Lamar Jackson. So he didn't even have to go there in the previous game. And rushing, the Baltimore Ravens had a guy who ran for 138 yards on 9 carries. Okay, Mitchell. I don't know where they picked him up, but he sounds like he's doing good. We went for 113 yards on 40 carries, whole staff. Okay? Our main running back got 44 yards. That's Jerome Ford on 20 attempts, 2.2 a carry. It's interesting. The best back of our three backs, because Pierre Strong, Jerome Ford, and Kareem Hunt all ran, the best one was Pierre Strong at 3 yards a carry. Okay, Kareem Hunt had 2.7 a carry, although some of his yards were really well-timed 5-6 yard pickups, weren't they?
Right, and Pierre Strong had two rushes for losses.
Yes.
Which drastically hurt that average. Not that that means...
Well, not, yeah, game, because but he only had 3 carries for 9 yards.
Okay? There you go.
And keep, then now, if two of those rushes were for losses, right? He really had 1 carry for probably 12 yards, and then, you know, you had to subtract.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure two of them were from losses. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he had one decent pickup, and it was like two for losses. Now, very short and one for a loss.
Watson had the best on the ground. He was 7.3 a carry. He had 3 carries for 22 yards along a 13. Again, I know it's in his arsenal. I like to, especially because of the shoulder now. I don't want to see Deshaun running that much. I think Deshaun blows out of the pocket way too quickly. He doesn't let a pocket form around him like he should often. Now, let's give credit where it's due, because on that thing of beauty pass, Deshaun climbed the pocket like he was supposed to, too.
Right.
So.
Well, I think the other thing with Deshaun, too, is as he gets comfortable and actually gets confidence back, and I will still echo this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But this still, to me, is not, I don't think it's kind of sunk all the way into fans. He played half a season last year. Okay. We're about at the halfway mark this year. Okay. Okay. And if we're even gauging this the same as probably the best athlete you've ever seen sit out of a sport and then come back, being Michael Jordan, it took him a season's worth of games to get back to normal shape. Okay. I mean, we're still in a phase where, like, what we're expecting out of Watson, despite the fact that we paid him the money and we want to see it, it's kind of ridiculous, okay? I'm not making an excuse for why he isn't and that the Browns need him to be, because you did pay him this money and he did accept the money, so you accept the criticism that comes with that.
So but is it...
The
but
expectation...
Is it, okay, I'm just asking, and I'm not trying to be funny. Or maybe I am, I don't know. But I see Deshaun. While the defense is on the field, they'll flash to Deshaun. He's looking at the game or when he was out injured and everything. Is it just me, or does Sean look like sometime he's disconnected in the way? Okay. You know, the typical, the dumb jock thing, right? I mean, and I'm saying this because, you know, your quarterback in the NFL supposed to be a really smart guy, right?
No, I don't think that. I think he's thinking.
Okay, is he?
Here's my thing, even with somebody sitting out of a sport or anything of any professional level that you act on instinctually, right? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You come back and you're trying to perform like you used to, you start thinking. We know what thinking does in a sport where everybody else is acting instinctually. And now you're thinking about what you're doing. Okay. You're a step behind right now. He's all intents and purposes, he's a step behind what he usually is. As confidence comes back, we'll start to see sparks of what he used to be, because he's just going to do it then, right? So when he gets those runs and he's pointing down the field and you get that comfortableness out of him, yeah, there's going to be some smirks and people like, oh man, get in there and play the game. But you need that, okay? Because
okay.
You need him to start feeling comfortable so he's just playing and not thinking, okay? You're out there thinking.
No, I get that, and I think we are starting to see that, and I'm actually really starting to like see some of the play I'm getting out of him. It's just, I guess, because of the contract and every other circumstance that surrounds Deshaun, it's easy to criticize Deshaun. Okay, it's you know, I'm looking forward to the day where that's no longer a thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they got, I mean, and I don't get a sense for how Stefanski and, come on, the Andrew Berry actually feel about Deshaun, because the report that came out, this was 2 weeks ago during the height of the missing Deshaun Watson. Jay Glazer came out and gave a very insider report on the shoulder, and it's where you were actually, he was like the only source you were getting any really good information on this thing from. They're telling you why he was out, right? But Jay Glazer, he said it outright. He said two times the Browns have now in the last decade, two times the Browns have, the owner has stepped in and made a decision on quarterback. And that was Johnny Manziel and Deshaun Watson.
I would like to point out, okay, because there is not, Johnny Manziel was during the time of Browns doom.
Well, okay? I understand, so but it was the same Jimmy Haslam.
Same. That's not what I'm getting at. I get you. Okay. Well, what I'm getting at is general NFL don't actually know what it looked like, okay, because they didn't watch it. They just watched the craziness. And the results of like what happened off the field and everything else, but they didn't actually see him play. Okay.
Right.
Browns weren't on the center stage. Okay. There was no highlights to see. I mean, it just, most don't actually know what the play looked like. Okay. So you hear the man just didn't pan out. He wasn't looking at the book. They don't remember the fact, despite he wasn't looking at the book, raw athleticism and arm.
Oh, no.
It is.
That's literally the point Jay Glazer's making, though, here. Listen, no, there is undeniable that the talent was there.
Oh, yeah.
But the owner comes in. First of all, the owner pays a guy who has the title of general manager. He pays a guy who has the title of head coach. And they get together along with the scouting staff. And that's how you draft people or how you acquire talent. Okay, if the owner just had all the brains to do it himself, he'd be fucking Jerry Jones in Dallas, wouldn't he? Okay.
Now,
the problem becomes is that the owner doesn't have to live with this guy on a day-to-day basis.
No.
The general manager and the coach do. Okay? So that's what I was saying. In what you have in Deshaun Watson, whether that's a good choice or a bad choice, I'm not even evaluating the choice, is a choice that the owner came, stepped in and said, this is what we're going to do. In other words, the team walked away from a semi-successful quarterback, spent $230 million guaranteed and mortgaged their future because the owner said, this is what we're doing. I'm not asking for your fucking input. Okay.
Well, I'll counter that with two. There's two reasons why. It's ridiculous, okay? And ridiculous may not be ridiculous in the way you think I'm about to phrase it, okay? Before I start that, I'm going to say, in a technical sense, you could say Jimmy, though, is batting 100 on his forcefulness for how do I put it, unique talent, okay? Because the talent was there for Johnny. And the talent is there for Watson. Whether or not it flourishes into anything successful for us, we do not know. Okay? So that at least he's batting 100 on. But like you said, he's not the one having to coach that talent.
Right, exactly. Okay? And so I'm trying, understanding that from the Jay Glazer report, the point I'm making is that I'm trying to now look as Kevin Stefanski on the sidelines, at Kevin Stefanski in a press conference, Andrew Berry in the same, and get whether I feel like the praise they give Deshaun is genuine or because that's what they got to say because the owner's listening. Look, okay.
The other thing I point out, at least Jimmy is not doing what we've got in the past. Okay. And while no, it has not worked out, he didn't try to polish a turd into a diamond. Okay.
Right.
The athleticism was a diamond. It's just the head that went with the athleticism. Okay.
Yeah. Who knew the boy had brain damage, right?
But the point I was about to make is the other point to that is both times, okay, the hard part for the Browns on this and why I think Jimmy hasn't really been called out on this, okay, in the media the way you think he should be as a Browns fan is because both times you can't really argue with the way he stepped in, okay? When he stepped in with Johnny, our quarterback play was abysmal, okay? Like, it was bad. Okay.
Yeah, but I would just say to anybody who looks at that, to understand that we eschewed Derek Carr. We said, Derek Carr, we don't want you. We're drafting Johnny Manziel.
Okay, but here's my counter argument to that. Derek Carr then left the team, left our team, and went and stunk it up somewhere else.
No. Derek Carr was drafted by the Oakland Raiders. And went on to great success.
Oh, no, I get what you're saying.
Draft, Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater drafted in the same draft. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Teddy Bridgewater's had this great, successful career, but he certainly had early success, and he certainly had a better career than Johnny Manziel. But okay.
I get that. And I'm not arguing that the Johnny Manziel pick was bad.
Uh-huh.
I'm arguing that in hindsight of everything, most people will look at it because they didn't actually watch any of what Johnny Manziel did and not understand that had Johnny worked out from a head standpoint, he could have been the best short quarterback to ever play in the NFL.
An
athletic standpoint, he was that.
Because he was a fucking troll. I mean, think of it. This guy, okay, Johnny Manziel, at the height he was, had 10 and a half inch hand span. Okay? I mean, he could grip a ball like a 6 foot five guy. Okay?
And you could see the zip on the ball.
I'm pretty sure if they didn't wear. I'm pretty sure Johnny has hobbit feet. Okay?
Because these are the things. Johnny was fast.
Yeah.
Okay? He wasn't a normal short quarterback. He was as fast as any freaking quarterback that size past you, making him Lamar Jackson or Michael Vick. Okay.
Right.
And the zip he had on his ball was ridiculous. Okay.
I just want to see more. I want to see more of those throws from Deshaun, like I saw in the second half. Because if he can do that twice a game, you got something.
Right. So all I'm doing is defending the fact that the Johnny pick wasn't a misjudgment of the actual raw athletic talent.
No, but okay? I just think it's a whole
entire person.
Think it's a bad precedent for the owner to come in and do this type of stuff because honest to goodness, and I can only tell you that I don't think we'd be still suffering from the setback had we just stuck it out with Baker. Okay. And look, I'm not being a Baker apologist here, but what I'm saying is Baker has played decent football since he left Cleveland in very adverse settings.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you this. I was not a fan of Baker. I wasn't actually even excited when they signed Watson to the deal. The only thing I said about the Watson thing that was good at the time is, the Browns actually went out and got somebody, whereas normally the Browns if they feel themselves in a situation, we just sit in a situation. You know what I mean? They yeah. just go out and get, they went out and got their guy. So, I mean, in that sense.
Oh, that haven't been said, you know, that's the thing. I don't care how bad Watson gets, man. That's your guy. Okay.
Right. Now, here's the other part to that, though. I feel the same. And this is what I was getting to with the Jimmy thing. Okay. I think when Jimmy stepped in and enforced the Johnny Manziel thing, we were in a situation where our quarterback play was that bad. Okay. And what Kevin Stefanski allowed to happen to Baker, because the what's being forgot about the Baker situation is Baker played bad. Baker got injured. Baker was playing worse, right? And our team, okay, the coaching allowed Baker to be chewed up by the media.
Oh, yeah, they did not stand up for him a bit.
No, they allowed him to be chewed up by the media, which exacerbated the situation, right? So then when your owner now steps in and says, this is your quarterback, can you blame him?
No, no. No, you can see exactly how they got to the place they're in. What my concern as a Browns fan right now is this the way this season has gone so far, these first eight games, is this sustainable through another nine games?
Yes. I watched that defensive line. We have an actual we have a defensive line, I feel right now, where any of the four guys are a threat to sack the quarterback.
Well, right, but okay, so here's the thing. The Ravens are just the kind of team to test what they're doing, because they're able to rush like that because the corners can lock it down.
Right.
Well, and Lamar Jackson throws that curveball. He says, oh, you're going to lock it. You're going to play man coverage and over pursue me. Watch me run on you.
Well, this is,
yeah.
And what Lamar Jackson poses to our defense would be the same thing that used to be a problem for people back when they played against Vic. Okay.
Exactly.
I think Lamar is a little bit more evolved in the sense that Lamar's throwing is a little bit better than Vic. I don't think it's as dynamic as Vic's was when he was younger. Okay.
No, but it is overall. It's on a level that's commensurate with the other best quarterbacks in the conference.
Right, right, right. Exactly. So he's as an actual pure passer, he's better. Okay, but he also brings the dynamic of you have to. There has to be a normalcy of safe play. So what they used to do is to Vic is they used to have a linebacker shadow. The teams that played Vic good had a good linebacker that shadowed. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. If you're the Cleveland Browns and the defense and the way they go at it, now you take a linebacker and you assign him to Lamar, right? That changes your front seven configuration.
Right. That's what I was about to say, but that changes your defense. So will we do that, or will we stick to what we do and enforce our will upon the Ravens?
Yeah, that's going to be the thing. How do you tackle it? How do you handle it?
See, I remember back when Vic was on the Falcons, right? Because the Panthers, and you had Julius Peppers and stuff. And I can say, I can remember that I watched the Panthers play two different ways. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, I remember the Panthers in their heyday with Peppers, and they have during their best defense in the league trying to assert their will. And they did until just one play. And then they go 60 yards.
Where he split the guys. Yeah.
Right. It only takes one friggin' time.
It only takes one play. That's the big thing. See, with Lamar, you've got to stop the big play. Because that's the game winner. So, I expect it to be a close game. I expect it to be a low-scoring game, relatively. Because of all that defense on the field. And who's going to come up with the big plays? Is it going to be Deshaun to Cooper or is it going to be Lamar to Odell Beckham Jr.? Because they're going to be a big play that makes the difference in this game.
It's going to be an interesting game. I think if I'm going to talk about things that I saw that I really liked from last game, is offenses this year have decided, okay, that they're still going to try their hardest to take Garrett out the game. Okay. As a result, the pressure from everybody else on our defensive line is making the difference. Okay. And I think that's something that's been talked about in years past with Myles Garrett. What would it be like if the rest of the defensive line?
Yeah. How about if you had another guy on this line and that double team makes it not work for them?
Now it's almost like there's four guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Any one of them. I mean, Dalvin Tomlinson, look, he had guy that was on number 94.
He was on fire last game.
Yeah, three sacks. Yeah. And that's just amazing. Steelers keep winning. Bengals keep winning. This whole freaking division is in the playoffs if the season ended today.
What did I say a couple of weeks ago? I said I expect the Bengals are going to keep winning and we're going to have the hardest division in the league.
Yeah, and what it's also making...
Exactly what's happened.
If the Browns can continue to win, and this is my big question, okay? A lot of football experts at the beginning of the season have the Browns pegged for 9-10 wins tops, okay? And you could see it happening. You could see a loss to the Ravens, an upcoming loss to the Steelers 2 weeks from now. All of a sudden, you're 5-5, right? I mean, it could happen.
I also want to point out, okay, our defense is great. The Ravens' defense is great. They're being talked about a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the round of the league and you look at points for and statistics on defenses, all the defenses in our division are actually good.
Oh, yeah. Because even the Bengals are standing up and playing D. It's amazing. But Joey Burrow is he's on fucking fire. He's winning games single-handedly. What Joe Burrow did in that game, that last game they played, he won that game for the team because guess what he as a quarterback did? He kept that drive going. He didn't let the Bills get the ball back. That's how the game got won. And see, the very type of thing that we get frustrated and doesn't happen is, you know, when we most need a run the clock out drive, we get a 3-and-out. And so Kevin Stefanski can't pull up and try to show everybody his big brain no more. When it's an obvious 3rd-and-3 run the ball situation, we can't have that anymore because every one of those moments becomes more crucial, more critical, and more costly as the season goes on.
In response to that best defense thing, okay? I'm going to pull this up here.
Okay.
This is just the first defensive list I looked at. I didn't try to pick a specific one, just pulled up the first one. So this is Pro Football Network.
Okay.
Browns, they have ranked number one. Okay. They have the best defense in the NFL. It's important, though, to note the competition they've faced so far. They started with the Bengals in awful weather. Then they moved to Pittsburgh, offense that looked lost in week two. And then they finished their opening schedule with a dominating performance against the Tennessee Titans, who have arguably the worst offensive line in the NFL. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, this is going off of November 8th. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is
a current. That's today.
Right. So this is a current. Okay. So Brown's still number one by their ranking. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore number two. The Chiefs number three, which is scary when we're talking about the playoffs, right? So we're talking about our offense in comparison to our defense. Is our defense that much better to be able to beat the Chiefs with their offense?
Exactly. And I mean, we got to get good, more out of our offense.
Right. With their defense actually still being good, okay? So Chiefs number three, the Jets are number four, Dallas Cowboys are number five, Jacksonville Jaguars are number six, the Saints are number seven, 49ers are number eight, Pittsburgh Steelers are number nine. Okay, so mm-hmm. That's three teams in our division in the top 10. Detroit is number 10, and to prove my point further, at 11, that's steadily climbing, Bengals at 11.
There you go.
And by next week, we could be looking at every team in our division in the top 10 of defense.
Which is fucking amazing. But the one thing that has the Browns, and Browns fans are having a hard time, because I personally feel like it's a dirty, cheap joke being played on me, because the Browns have legitimate aspirations here now, because they're hanging on to the number one defense in the league, and they're getting just enough offense to win games, you know? And you can get someplace that way. That when defense travels, okay? Defense wins road games. And the home field advantage for our defense is just ridiculous. I mean, what we did was, come on, the total yards for the Cardinals, right? It's just ridiculous. You know what the total yards was, right? Total net yards for the Cardinals was 58 yards. That's all they got all game.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
That's all they got all game. That's just nuts.
I mean, what I will say to the way the Browns season is shaping up is they only need a little bit of improvement in the offense, I think, to tip the scale. Okay, like when I say, I want to use the Chiefs as an example. I actually didn't know the Chiefs' defense was ranked that high.
Uh-huh.
Their defense, anyway. The Chiefs, with their offense to their defense, and you're doing comparison, you're teeter-tottering this, right? If the Browns got a little bit more offense, I think our defense is good enough that even though they're number three defense, you're putting yourself really at equal standing. We need to be able to reliably put up 21 points. Okay. Yeah. If we can reliably put up 21 points, I think we're on par with anybody in the league at that point.
Here's the thing that I think. If you can get, because if you remember, if you look at the Titans game, right? Deshaun's numbers were something like 20, you know, 22 of 27 or something like that for 279 and a touchdown or two, right? Well, it was a real similar game to this 19 of 30 for 219. Okay. And he didn't have to have the stellar games of Deshaun Watson of 2019. But he does have to have these games. He's got to have this pedestrian, freaking competent quarterback game. And he's got to have those consistently, week in, week out. And if he can do that, we can win our way to a playoff berth.
Right. The other thing I'd like to point out is the fact that our passing defense right now is, our success is coming from man play. Okay. Means, I think if our team can get to the playoffs, we fare very well to be able to pull upsets in games that somebody may think we shouldn't win.
Again, but it's a tenuous thread on which we hang when it comes to our secondary. Because think of Denzel Ward for a second. As great as he's playing, right? He's a concussion away from career ending.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is—he has one more gin, and then no doctor in his right mind gonna let him play. Okay, and that's our top corner.
Hey, for all we know, that may be even more reason why you're getting the kind of stellar play from.
Well, very well may be. I mean, again, but all I'm saying, it's a tenuous thread on which we hang, because you got a severe talent drop off when. And I thank God we've got Emerson in, because he can slide over from the slot and fill in for Newsom, okay, who's gimpy, you know, may not play, okay? So now you're going to, you know, so there's a significant drop off when you get past our starters. Okay.
Right. No, I get that. What I'm really trying to voice on is that you can get this defense to the playoffs. I don't think it's a defense that we have to worry about. Well, this team is going to get to watch tape on them, and it's going to. We don't really have our defense isn't relying on gimmicks.
No, it's not a scheme thing, is it? No. This is just we're going to pin our ears back and rush you with five guys, okay? Because they're consistently coming with an extra guy, okay, and man coverage in the back. Okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna send five. Okay. And then you deal with it, man, because we've got you covered back here.
That's what I'm saying. So I think right now you just got to get them to the playoffs because it's going to be a very good playoff defense. I think it will. You know what I mean? One game scenario. I think the defense has a better chance of figuring out an offense rather than an offense figuring out a defense. Especially when that defense isn't really using a gimmick.
You watch the YouTube videos of Quincy Carrier?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so he's got a good one out this week. Why I'm more encouraged by Deshaun Watson than I thought. And he does really good film analysis. So that's what I like about Quincy's videos. And, he points out some things about what Deshaun's doing under center, in the shotgun, and all that. So, you know, highly recommended watch.
Good things. A day ago. In general, good things, bad things?
No, good things, good things. Anyway, he's saying he's more encouraged by Deshaun Watson than he thought he would be.
Okay. I'm going to watch it to see exactly now, what that guy's saying.
I just want to say this. A week before P.J. Walker's last bad performance that lost the game for us, okay? Quincy Carrier came out with a video said PJ Walker's better than I thought he was. Okay, so I don't know if I like this video being out there right now. Okay,
well, in defense of that, I'll put it this way: I don't think that first game was indicative for you to entirely say PJ Walker is this or that.
Okay? No, I think PJ Walker was thrust into a situation which. Listen, if you were considering PJ Walker being your starting quarterback, it'd be time to jump all over this guy because his talent level's not where he can be a starter in this league. Okay? Not for long periods of time. You're not going to start him for 10 games and expect to be 6-4. You're going to be 4-6.
I'd also counter that I'd put something on top of that and say, I don't think the Browns offense would be the particular offense you would have picked for him to flourish in either.
Oh, absolutely not. Again, Joshua Dobbs proves why he should still be a Brown by going and with less than a week in Minnesota, getting thrust into the game and winning the freaking game for him. Okay. And Joshua Dobbs should be your backup.
True.
Because that fifth round pick ain't going to make a difference.
But great for Joshua Dobbs that he got to go somewhere and he's actually being used.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he'll definitely get used in Minnesota because, you know, Cousins out for the year.
I mean, I'd say overall, I think the Browns are in a good position. We have a favorable schedule. Our last half for us to end up at least.
Got to get past the next 2 weeks. I mean, if we can get past the next 2 weeks, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if splitting them even works because they're both divisional games. Okay. I mean, you got to win both of these games. If you don't, it's getting ugly for you already because it doesn't appear that any of the teams in our division are going to start losing. So the only opportunities you have are when you play each other. And after next 2 weeks, we don't play another divisional game till the last game of the season when we play the Bengals.
Right. Well, I counted this. This probably should be our last run is to look at the games here. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, we got the Ravens.
Right.
Okay. And we got the Steelers. Right. if we're you're the Browns this year, you have the best defense you've had since time could remember.
Right.
Okay. So you have to be going for the juggler. So you have to have a mark on the calendar for both these games as must wins.
Oh, they got to be.
Your first stab at the division. This is your claiming.
Right, because after that, I mean, after those two games, it's Broncos, Rams, you know, Jaguars. Okay, that's another tough game.
Right. But if you just won the easy games after, if you won those two and then just won all the games that you absolutely should win,
you're going to win. Here's the question, though. I got a game that's coming up on Christmas Eve. We get to play the Texans. And you saw what C.J. Stroud did to the Bucks, right?
I get you, but that's a game we should win.
Okay, except I'm just saying to you, I watched that game. I saw Baker Mayfield go up with 50 seconds left on the clock. He threw the winning touchdown. And C.J. Stroud takes his ass out on that field and plays like he's been playing a lot longer than he's been playing. Okay?
I get you. But what I'm saying is if we have the defense we think we do, then that doesn't happen against us. It don't happen.
Well, I mean, listen, come what may on this game coming Sunday, you're in Baltimore, okay? You may win, you may not. But you listen, you cannot lose to the Steelers when they come to Cleveland on November 19th. Your entire season could be riding on that game if you should so happen to lose on November 12th against the Ravens. Okay, but guarantee you, if you can't get past the Steelers in your own house, they're not going anywhere. These next two games, I mean, this is it. This is the litmus test. They can stack all the wins they want to. If they lose these two games, it's not going to matter.
Well, I've been saying this. It sucks for us and the fact that we're in the division we're in because our litmus tests are always our biggest challenge and everything is always our division. It does not matter.
Always. Yeah.
Okay. Whereas like, there's other teams, oh, the Chiefs are on our schedule and blah, blah, blah. The Chiefs could be on our schedule right now and our biggest test is still.
But see, here's the problem. Here's the hole we've dug ourselves. Okay. You got to beat the Ravens because you can't end up in a tie with the Ravens at the end. You got to believe they're going to get another loss somewhere, but you got to take one directly out of their hide. Otherwise, with what they did against the Seahawks, right?
Right.
That's your head-to-head. They beat you out in a head-to-head tie.
Right.
Okay? The Steelers.
Yeah, you shouldn't have lost.
Right. The Steelers got one on us like that, too. They got a head-to-head matchup that keeps them above us, even though we're tied in record. Okay? Right now, the only team we got to edge over in the division is the Bengals because we beat
them. Let's look at this objectively. What we haven't looked at, and I'm not saying this is going to happen or not, okay? Mm-hmm. The Bengals could still fool a bunch of things, okay? Say we did lose the two games, but then we pretty much won out on everything else. Let's just play with that scenario, say, right? Mm-hmm. If the Bengals went and then went dominant in the division at that point, okay, and knocked everything down a peg, we'd be in the same. Do I think that's going to happen? But I'm just saying, in theory, the way our division's working out, we don't know because it's happened. It happened last year. We don't know yet that the Bengals aren't the best team in our division. Right. Or our biggest threat in the division as far as winning it.
Well, the one thing's for sure, if it ends up being the Bengals that are the biggest threat. You got them on your schedule last game of the season. You could take care of them yourself.
But here's the kicker to it, and this is why I was getting at. The Bengals play the Ravens week after we do, right? So let's say whatever happens, we have the Bengals. We already got a game on the Bengals, okay? Mm-hmm. The Bengals beat the Ravens, knock them down a peg. They still have two games against the Steelers, okay? And they beat the Steelers.
Okay, So here are the teams with the toughest remaining strength of schedules, Jeff.
Okay.
The Bengals are the top. They have the toughest schedule.
Yeah, I can believe that.
632 is the winning percentage of the teams, the remaining teams they play. Guess who has the number two toughest schedule? The Ravens.
Oh, the Ravens do.
Yeah,
yes. I can see that too.
Then it's Raiders, Bills, 49ers, Dolphins, Cowboys, Commanders, then the Browns. Okay. The Browns are way down at, what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Ninth toughest remaining. The Seahawks aren't in the top 10. I mean, not the Seahawks. The Steelers aren't in the top 10. The Steelers have the easiest remaining schedule in the North, guys. Okay.
Well, then that means the Steelers already made it through the meat.
Yeah.
So it's quite possible. So we haven't talked about this yet. Okay. This has really been something we've kind of been skirting on. Steelers have just been winning, but we've been skirting on not calling them the possible best team in the division. But if they've already played, our schedules are all similar, okay?
Right.
So if they've already got it to where their last part of their schedule is easy, that means they've already played the point.
Okay. Here's the easiest schedules remaining strength of schedules. The Falcons have the easiest. Then it's Saints, Lions, Colts, Texans, Eagles, Steelers. Steelers have the seventh easiest schedule left in the league at 487 winning percentage of the opponents they face. What I find interesting is that the 8-1 Eagles, who haven't even played a complete football game yet on offense and defense in the same game, have and are 8-1 with the best record in the league, have a 464 schedule in front of them. Who in the NFC is going to stop the Eagles?
No one.
Yeah, because
I can see why the Steelers have such an easy schedule. Look at what they played already. They played the 49ers, us. Okay, so they're one game out. They got one game against us out of the way. They played the Raiders. Not sure how the Raiders are doing this year, actually. They played the Texans. They played one game out of the gates on the Ravens. They played the Rams already. And they played the Jaguars. And they played the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the teams that are sitting are the easy ones left. That, like, all the easy, considered easy games past, like, Seattle and stuff, everybody's played. They've already played them.
Most of the prognosticators are looking for the Browns to start folding this week. Okay. I've read a lot of people prognosticating that, you know, the odd team out in the North, if only three make it, is going to be the Browns. I want them to be wrong. I do.
Mm-hmm.
For my desire for them to be wrong, what has to happen is the Browns got to win next 2 weeks. They got to win the cream of their games because that's what's going to get you into the playoffs. If you can't put down that, like we put down the 49ers, we've got to put down our divisional opponents. Because if you can't win the division, you can't win. You know, ain't that the old saying? First win the division, then you worry about the playoffs. I'm just saying. Browns got to win. The Browns have to win against the Ravens. I consider this week a must win. Do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't know how I feel in terms of confidence about this. I certainly hope the team, none of the members of the team feel like I feel. I hope that. I hope they, being in the middle of this, see, and I kind of like that Myles Garrett came out and really talked up Deshaun Watson in terms of, you know, watching him get to work and do his thing. And so that, you know, Myles is closer to it than me. Okay. And if he sees something special in Deshaun, I'm going to say, okay, I'm with that.
Well, past that, he's also what's viewed as a team leader, at least right, in the media. And Deshaun needs confidence. He needs reassurance in the surety of what he's doing. Because, I mean, quite honestly, that's what I feel like I've seen. That's the flaw in Deshaun Watson right now. And I think you see it in when he makes a bad play or whatever else, okay? It's not rolling off of his shoulder, and he's thinking about it, okay?
Well, whatever he did, whatever he did second half last Sunday, because it was looking shaky in the beginning. First quarter, Deshaun Watson was not looking good, okay? And he did something. He got a little better. Look, he got lucky. He got lucky in the first half with bouncing that ball off the guy's helmet, and Amari tracked it in and made a touchdown out of it, okay?
Well, I think the running play is what helped him. He ran that 12-yard, 11-yard run to the down. Okay? And then after that, it looked like he pretty much kicked in gear. Okay? What you didn't see from him, and we saw earlier this year, is him forcing to try to make a play. Okay? And that's where I'm getting at with these thinking too much. Has a bad play. Okay, or whatever, and something didn't work out, and now he's forcing something to try to make something happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing less of that where he's just playing now, okay? And the more you see that, I think you can start seeing less mistakes and everything and more of those.
I wanted to go over these because we do every week, the numbers that matter.
Mm-hmm.
And this was pretty good. Third down efficiency, right? This is how you do it. You hold them 1 of 12, 8.3% the Cardinals had. And the Browns were 6 of 17, 35.3. But did you know that the Browns are dead last in the league on third down conversions? They're the worst.
No, I did not.
Yeah, offensively, they are absolutely the worst in conversion rate on third down. So they have to extend drives when it's third down. And last week was a good start in fixing that problem.
Right. Like I said, one of them was that run from Watson.
Yeah.
And that's why I think his confidence kind of turned around in the game as well.
And the Browns were 3 of 4 in the red zone, 75%, not bad. 1 for 1, goal to go. They just totally dominated time of possession, 36-25 to 23-35. And, of course, it showed on the scoreboard 27-0. That's the way you win games. And listen, I don't care. It doesn't have to be pretty. I mean, I know there's all kind of teams out there, you know, and you got like the Dolphins. The Dolphins can put offense on to where it almost looks like a clinic sometimes, right? But I don't care. I don't need that. I don't have to have that. I just need some complimentary football played so we can get this defense a blow in between series. Okay? You ain't got to score every drive, right? But move the ball. Get at least two series of plays out of it. 6 downs, okay? Give these guys a chance to breathe between when they have to come on the field. And I think that's the formula for the Browns to win. Obviously, you've got to score periodically, but you got a good place kicker. And Pajorquez may be a Pro Bowl punter this year. You know, he had a punt of 73 yards. He had a punt of 73 yards.
I was going to say, I know he had that one that was like ridiculous.
Yeah, it's that 73-yard punt. And this ain't the first one he's had this year of that kind of length. Bohorquez is just, you know, what I want to see is Bohorquez do less work, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, when your punter's making headlines, that means you're not sustaining drives.
That's true.
And so, do you have any feelings, predictions you want to make about the game on Sunday, or let's just watch this one.
I think the game is going to come down to quarterback play. I think both defenses are going to do what they've done all year, and the difference making is going to come down to quarterback play.
Well, I hope it's a magic Sunday for Deshaun Watson then, because I feel the same way. I feel like it's going to be big play made by quarterback. I don't care if it's quarterback on his feet or quarterback through the air. The quarterback on the winning team is going to have the play that makes the difference. And that's, I literally feel like that's how it's going to be.
I have this feeling this year, because I've been saying the time it takes for an athlete to come back. I do have this feeling this year that everybody is going to get to see Watson click. Okay. Like fully click in a game, and you're going to see, oh, so this is what we've been waiting on. Okay.
Hey, I'd be happy to see that.
I don't know if it's going to happen next week or later this year, but I do think it is going to happen. Just hopefully by the time it does happen, we are a playoff bound.
Exactly. Range. I just want, by the time it happens, for it still to be a meaningful football game for us.
Right.
Well, having said that, is there anything else you want to point out or bring up before we get on out of Dodge and get ready for this week's game?
I mean, usually I go into the individual stats a bit. Admittedly, I've had been moving and stuff, so I did not really do that.
Yeah, I didn't do the research either, but it was, let's just suffice it to say this. Everything was superlative about what the Browns did in the game against the Cardinals. And I think the only criticism you could catch for being high on the Browns about what they did against the Arizona Cardinals was the fact that it was the Arizona Cardinals.
I think the one thing I'll point out, because I've been pointing this out all year, I think he's been, I don't want to say he's underappreciated, because I don't really think he's underappreciated. I think at this juncture in the league, in his career, he's severely underrated. And that's Amari Cooper. He's proven this year that he's legitimately a top 10 receiver in the league.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he's actually viewed that right now, but he's played that way, even with all the offensive problems that we've
had. All the offensive problems we got, because let's just be honest here. For the, even with in the space of that dominating win, right? The receiving core, if you take Amari Cooper out of it, right, was totally fucking unimpressive.
No, I totally agree.
Out of 219 yards, Amari Cooper's got 139 of them. He caught everything thrown his way, 5 of 5. Okay,
I'm confident in saying right now at this juncture, since the Browns has come back from expansion, it's the best receiver they've had.
Yeah, absolutely.
On any roster. Not even close at this point.
Yeah, the next best receiver that day was Jerome Ford with 33 yards. Then Njoku had 26. Elijah Moore had 14. I really expect to see one of these moments, more Cedric Tillman.
Yeah. I mean, if you really think about the Browns, and this would be a good way to end for me. This is a good spot. The Browns are in a position where they should win next week. This next game coming anyway, it will be one of the biggest games in the franchise's history since they've come back. Mm-hmm. That's hard to say because there are playoff games in there, but I'm just talking about the juncture of like what it means to historically.
Oh, the statement it would make. The right. statement it would make for the Browns to go into Baltimore, beat the Ravens at this critical time of the season to give the Ravens their third loss.
Right. You see? And what it means. You have a defense that's challenging the dominance of the defense you have, right? From a talent standpoint, we're in a situation where we probably have the best defense alignment we've had since the Browns came back. Okay? Right. The best receiver they've had since the Browns came back. He's not there and playing, but the best running back we've had since the Browns came back.
Yeah, Myles Garrett's everything we ever wished Courtney Brown could be plus.
Could be. Right. You got the best corner you've had since the Browns came back. bar maybe Joe Hayden. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so you get where I'm going with this. It's like mm-hmm. you got the best of so much that you've had since the Browns became a team again. And it's all in one span of time right now. Okay. This next game lets you further try to cement capitalizing on that. Okay.
Can Kevin Stefanski keep from self-sabotaging? I mean, because his biggest problem is he's smarter than he thinks he's smarter than he is sometimes.
And look, here's the other thing to add to this. I really want to end on this one.
Okay.
Which were most of the I give him a bunch of criticism, and I still think he deserves the criticism. Okay. And lots of other people give him criticism, and I think he deserves this. Play calling mm-hmm. to me still deserves the criticism. But in all intents and purposes, he's also the best coach we've had.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can tell me one. Show me one guy that's done better. He ain't there. This is Kevin Stefanski, like it or not, he's the best coach you've seen since 1999. Because if you go back before then, it was Bill Belichick, and clearly he was better. Okay. Maybe not at that time. He was still getting there.
So there's too much of the best of right now. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is probably the best of we've had since, like, you know, 80-something or early 90s or something. Okay? Mm-hmm. Even if we went past the expansion, it's still
amazing.
We're still looking at, like, the best of, the best of, the best of, the best of. Okay? And I hadn't even touched on the fact that Njoku may possibly be the best tight end we've had.
Oh, it might be. Well. He might be. And I got one complaint, and I don't know if it's about Njoku or if it's about how they use Njoku. But I want to see them stop putting in places where he's either right at the line or behind the line of scrimmage expecting him to make the yards. I need him out in the wing, like on a slant position or something like that, where he's already positive yards and he can lean into it and get you the other two that you need for a first down. But to have him try to create off of screens is, I think, a bad use of Njoku.
I have a double view on it. Mm-hmm. In one way, because I think it was pointed out in one of the games, and I didn't know this, but he's one of the better ball carriers after a catch in the league right now.
So okay, I'm not saying he's not, because he sure gets his opportunities.
So in the sense, when he gets that short pass, you're capitalizing on the fact that he can run through some guys. Okay? On the other side of that, I agree with you. I think if the Browns employed using Njoku like Gronk is used or was used,
or
Travis Kelce, I think he'd be very good.
Absolutely. And given the lack of any other, and given the lack of any other receiver emerging other than Amari, it makes sense.
It makes sense. But with the lack of a running game this year, I think we're in a situation where you're just going to see more of that. Oh, yeah. Not the lack of a running game, the lack of consistency. We don't have Chubb.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think you're going to see more of that. I think if it weren't for that, I don't think you'd really be seeing that the way you are right now.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what they do at running back if we continue not to get any performance out of the group.
I have zero confidence they're going to do anything by that.
Well, I mean, they certainly can't trade for anybody. They can only pick up a free agent somewhere now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't foresee the Browns doing anything bar them picking up Adrian Peterson saying, hey, I can still do it. That's about it. I see happening.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, but if you get to the playoffs and you need a beast for a day, why not rent a beast?
I mean, that is to me the only option I've seen that's like worth, like, let's let's theoretically say here, if you brought Adrian Peterson in, right, and started him off at like the third back to see what happens, and you see Adrian Peterson showing off like Adrian Peterson,
right,
and then you use him. I mean, hey, it's not like you don't have to sign him for this crazy contract. You don't have to do any of that. To me, when I saw that headline, I was like, he's still got the body for it. If Adrian Peterson, the legend, thinks he could still do it, I mean, why not bring him in, let him do a third.
Yeah, exactly.
Third running back option one game, right? What if he blows it off as the third
running back? Because you could bring him in. The way the rules are about the practice squad now, even though he's a veteran, you could bring him in on the practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to take up active roster spot with him until you're sure he's ready to elevate. And I'm just saying, late November, December, whether it's regular season or it's early January in the playoffs, you're going to need yards out of running backs.
Now, I'm we're assuming a lot here because we're assuming he's football shape. Now, we have no idea. Adrian Peterson could be doing what Jerry Rice does, and he's always in football shape. Okay? We have no idea. Okay? So,
yeah.
I think if you inquired about him and how true that statement is that he made and how serious he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to, I'd almost be inclined to take him up on that, because that's the lowest risk, I think, of any option, right? Where you
exactly,
and you bring him in, and the potential, right? Let's say you even got half of Adrian Peterson. Is that not better than what we have now?
It's better than all of Jerome Ford. Okay, I'm just saying.
I mean, if you got half Adrian Peterson at this point, you could use him the same
way. He'd be getting you more than 2.2 a carry. Okay.
I mean, right. You wouldn't need to make him a feature back.
No.
You could definitely use him.
But you could definitely see. Listen, you got a healthy, can still do it a little bit, Adrian Peterson. Can you imagine having that in the third quarter when you need to grind some?
That's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's when you're going to see the result of that. It's when it's time to grind. Now, given Kevin Stefanski's penchant for not grinding when he's supposed to, okay? Because, you know, the whole time with Chubb, we're like, imagine what you could do in third quarters if you actually ran the ball more than 16 times, okay?
Right.
It appears this year that Kevin's got that solved. He ran the ball 40 fucking times. Okay, Jerome Ford ran the ball 20 fucking times. Oh, we don't have a problem running Jerome Ford 20 times at 2.2 a carry, but he wouldn't run Chubb 20 times at 5.6 a carry. I don't get it. I mean, necessity is a mother because he's got to run the ball like this now. Okay, and I get it, but if he'd just been doing this all along, Chubb would be an even bigger beast than he is.
I agree.
You know what I watched the other day? I was watching the Beast Quake run, the Marshawn Lynch run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a heck of a run. That's all I can say. Mm-hmm. Amazing. So, do you know what Marshawn Lynch said he did after the play?
No.
You know, in the Super Bowl when they should have ran Marshawn, instead Russell throws the pick.
Right.
So Marshawn said he ran straight to Pete Carroll, took his helmet off, and said, "Ha ha 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 ha!" To Pete Carroll.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
laughed,
why he was
laughed in his fucking here. Face,
and that's why they got rid of him.
Yes. Yes. That's and he went to Oakland the next year, didn't he?
I'm pretty sure he was gone after that year.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. And that is why, because he said he laughed at Pete Carroll.
Look, I view that and is one of the that was to me one of the I have a lot of thoughts about that play. I have a lot of controversial thoughts about that. I'm not the biggest expert on like football play makeup, right? But from what I read about the play, the passing play was supposed to naturally have a pick. Okay?
Right.
The receivers cross, and one of the receivers is a natural pick for the other receiver, right? So with that, that defensive back is following, and they don't know the play, right? You're going to hit that pick. The guy who picked the ball in on that play beat the pick. Okay? They also didn't press the receiver at all. They did press the receivers on the play, which would, if I'm correct on this, you wouldn't press very hard if you thought they were going to fade to the back of the end zone.
Right. Okay?
So it was almost indicative that they knew the play, the Patriots. Okay. And, you know, the Patriots have been known for their discrepancies with play knowledge and stuff in the past. Okay. And yeah, it was a ridiculous pick. If you look, if you put all the stuff together, is it impossible that they knew the play and knew the jump? No, it is not, because it's a play that the Seahawks have ran. Okay.
Right.
But everything considered, it was like, if you look at all everything that it is, it was actually a very ridiculous interception.
Oh, it was. But in the end, it came down to a play that, what the fuck are you thinking about? You have Marshawn Lynch.
He had the best running back in the league that year.
Yeah, exactly. You got Marshawn Lynch here, and it's a yard to go. It's what are you doing?
Yeah.
And that's a coach in much the same way that we've seen Kevin Stefanski do time after time, that coaches himself out of a win.
Right.
Of course, he just said Pete Carroll did it on the biggest stage, you know, against a team that time and again has taken advantage of. And it warmed my heart the year of the helmet catch, because it finally happened to the Patriots instead of them happening to somebody else.
Right.
On the big stage.
I mean, look at some of the ridiculous things the Patriots won on. The Panthers, for all intents and purposes, if you go back and watch that Super Bowl, had John Casey not kicked the ball out of bounds.
Right. Yeah.
And gave them field position, they may not have been able to get in field goal range to win the game.
Right.
Okay. They've had some really crazy stuff.
Yeah, but the year that the Patriots looked poised to just be undefeated, break the Dolphins records. They were undefeated all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they lost the Super Bowl to the helmet catch, dude.
Yeah.
Goes to show you that's why they play the games.
Well, this is my personal opinion. Okay. I know people have had arguments with me on this, that the timing was right and everything else. Still to this day, I have not seen quarterback play to me that is indicative of them not letting Eli retire. Whether that was him failing finally too much or whatever, but failing, retiring as a starting quarterback. Okay.
Yeah.
Because of what he did do for them. Was he the best quarterback ever for them? No. But he won two Super Bowls for them. For all intents and purposes, it's like, almost like he shouldn't have won.
Yeah.
Okay. And they were like with some ridiculous plays in both of them.
And if you think about it, yeah, because Eli's performance was all over the map even that season. He pulled it together late in the season and had some amazing fucking games. But
he's one of the best
clutch time quarterbacks. Yeah.
He's one of the best playoff crunch time quarterbacks ever. There's no disputing it. He has some of the most, some ridiculous plays in crunch time of Super Bowl and playoff games. It's just not something you can debate. Overall quarterback play, is he among the Mount Rushmore? Not even close.
Oh no, not even kind of close. Not even top 10.
This is to me like having the conversation of like would you pick, you know, who would you want for a last shot or a big shot?
Oh, and Eli Manning's one of the picks. I'll take him. One of the
quarterbacks.
I'll take him.
Exactly. He'd be up there as one of the guys like, I take Eli.
I'll take Eli. I'd let Eli. Can I have that guy that catches him on his helmet too? Yeah. Jesus Christ. It's like, and it's hard to even give Eli credit for that because he put the ball somewhere near the guy and he catches it on his helmet. It's like, okay, amazing, amazing stuff. But anyway, having said all that, it's time to say this, dude. You know, it doesn't matter what you think, how you feel, whether you're trepidatious or you're confident. One thing's for certain. Sunday at 1 o'clock, the game in Baltimore is going to happen, and we're going to get to see this play out the way it will. And if we get our way, it's going to be with the Browns pulling off what would be an upset victory in Baltimore. I always like it when the Browns play the former Browns because we get just a little chance to exact some revenge on those guys that left town, drafted Ray Lewis and went and won a Super Bowl. I don't like them guys. And I really don't like that they have Lamar Jackson. But anyway, in the meantime, the in-between time, this is Paul and Jeff. And also for Hugh, who's not here with us tonight. From TBF, a Browns fans podcast, saying we're out.
This has been a Basement Tapes production.